Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, we're going to do something a little different. I want you guys to just be patient with us, but Bill and I are going to play this song, and then we're going to go into, right after this song, we're going to go into it.
Yes. We'll discussion. We'll talk about that, but let's kick some good music off. Let's start this new year on a good sound, all right?
Right.
Musica, maestro, musica. Everybody, I want to say welcome to the loading.
No, we're good.
We're back again. Welcome to Phil and Bill Show. Again, we have a flexible schedule because we want to talk about things we want to talk about. We hope everybody enjoyed the music. That was Creed. I hope we have some Creed fans out there. If not, listen. Now, We do change schedules an awful lot, and flexibility is our keynote. And with that, sum up that Sacramento has passed legal regulation of cell phones. A little bit, because we both want to discuss this pros and cons.
Guys, we're going to do one thing real quick. My little light is on. I'm gonna hang up and call right back. Don't go nowhere. Hey, live for a second. I got to check something out.
Sure, if you guys can hear me, we're getting tremendous static. I'd almost think that J. Edgar Hoover was still alive. I'm going to speak, well, in between the static, I'm going to try to speak. A technical crew working on this right away, talking to the main big guys and find out buses. I'm just going to talk to you softly in between the static, like lightning bolts or something. I don't know what you're hearing back there, wherever you're calling from and all that, but stay with us because they're working out there at the main central. Get this straightened out. It just goes to show you. Attic so I can talk. Driver's making every connection there is. He's talking the mainframe. God knows what he's doing. I think we're coming back clear. Still stay with us, guys. We're
okay,
still open to
it. Just stay there. I'm going to hang up real quick, and I think I can fix it.
Ladies and gentlemen, do not be alarmed. At this point in time, we believe Communist China is trying to block the voice of freedom, the last chance for Americans to get together and be able to speak to each other free. We understand now this opportunity. Yes, it looks like North Korea is aiding with Communist China trying to block our signals. Brave Americans and brave human beings across the world, do not give in to this. Be patient. Can anybody type me and let me know if some of that static's gone away yet? We are doing everything in our power to, I don't even know if I'm talking to anybody. Maybe I'm talking to an empty phone. That's kind of sad. And my age, sitting here late at night talking to a phone, I don't know if anybody's here. Years ago, I used to work on AM radio in the morning. In AM radio, I had a room with no windows. Many a morning, I would ask myself, is anybody out there? I've not had that feeling since I left AM radio, but it's just you and me. Mr. AT&T telephone, and his constant attempts by Communist China and North Korea to stop the voice of freedom. We will continue on. Screwdriver is cocked in the mainframe, and he actually, I want you to know this, he hit the phone. I don't know what technical bullshit that is, but he actually punched it, so maybe that helped it or not. I shall intermittently keep talking until we can straighten this up. I don't want to get into my subject tonight because I'm not sure if I'm just talking into the phone. Oh, something's happening, folks. Something's happening. Brave people around the world, do not let the threat of communist China and North Korea take over. Be brave, be free, be patient. Did I ever tell you people that, in my own opinion, that the computer is an invention of the... It's sucking the life cells out of our body. But I believe the important message that we're giving out is important enough for me to jeopardize this. I've been talking for a while. Again, I have no idea. Am I all alone? Screwdriver's left me. He's on the other phone. He's talking to the mainframe up there, calling at them. I shall intermittently just talk for a moment or two. I should like to say that I'd like to thank all of our friends that call in and all of our new friends that listen. I don't want to say, I don't want to get too corny and all that, but what happens in your state, what happens in your country today, if we cannot hear about it, it may happen in our state or our country tomorrow. What happens overseas, we need to know about it. You, my friends, wherever you are, you have to listen to our problems, because perhaps our problems today may be your problems. When the screwdriver comes back and tells me the stupid thing is working, I do want to talk about something that the California Supreme Court ruled on Monday. And we'll talk about that in a minute, too. It's kind of important to me, as it's many of our times we talk about past laws. This is a brand new one again, so we'll discuss that. I'm giving you a little teaser. I'm not going to talk about it until screwdriver comes back and tells me that we're hooked up live, or I've been talking to a phone with just nobody hooked up at all. Got a 50-50 chance that anybody can hear me out there. But that's okay. Screwdriver's not next to me because he's on all the other phones in there and he's calling up, threatening everybody and yelling and screaming. I shall just continue on. I wonder why so many people have tuned into these type of shows. Not our show. Our show's nothing special. There's people like us all across the world having their own shows and all that. But I wonder... Did everybody wake up one day and just say, I'm getting tired of having my rights taken away from me? I'm getting tired of not being that proud American, proud European, whatever country you're listening from. What would happen to us years ago? My grandparents would have never put up with this. My grandparents, by the way, were from Galway Bay, Ireland. I'm a second-generation immigrant in America. My family came over here. As many immigrants did, we were, you know, persecuted because we talked funny. I don't talk funny, but we had a very thick Irish accent. We went right from Galway Bay, Ireland, to Ellis Island, from Ellis Island to South Boston. At 15 years of age, I came out here, and I went to a school that, oh, there wasn't much money, and they didn't have any televisions or anything. So what the class would do, or the teacher would do, class was to have me speak or just read a little bit. That was the entertainment because of my Boston accent, which I've tried to ease away from. I don't know yet. I lost all my static.
Okay.
I'm communicating with Screwdriver. I'm trying to find out. I'm asking somebody to call us in or contact us so I can find out.
Hello, caller.
Yo, hello. Bill.
Hey, how you doing?
Bill, this is John from New Jersey. Can you hear me? I'm on Skype.
Yeah.
Hey.
Okay.
Were you able to hear me the past couple of minutes at all?
Yeah, I can hear you. I can hear you guys loud and clear.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, we just got.
Yeah, I can hear everything. Both. Yeah, I can hear all the conversations and no static. So, I guess you guys are up and running.
Talking in small circles because I didn't want to break into our subject, but I was just trying to get communication. Apparently, we had a major glitch in the... I think it's acting up again. Can you still hear us, buddy? Are we okay?
Yeah, I can hear
you.
I can still
hear
you,
brother?
John.
Okay, John, yeah. John from Jersey.
Yeah. We're just getting a little static over here and there, but
intermittent. We can deal with this. You know what? Let's start that subject because this is kind of interesting. I want to get out there. On the California Supreme Court ruled Monday that police do not need a warrant to search a cell phone carried by somebody under arrest. Now, would you elaborate on that a little bit? Because we're already having a few bits of disagreement. So we share a program called Point Counterpoint, and we're going to kind of discuss that a little bit because Screwdriver and I do not always agree on everything. So I'm going to turn over to you first. Okay, buddy?
Yeah, what the...
No, Bill.
It's not... They're jamming with us, dude.
Can you hear me now? You know, I don't actually think the feds are really causing much of these problems. I think they'd rather have everybody up and running so they could monitor the conversation. This technology is kind of spooky, and it's problematic, and it doesn't always work right. So, it's hard to see where the issues are coming from. But
where it says they can hear you, but we're cut out.
I can hear you, fellas. I can hear both you guys.
Well, first of all, I've got to tell you, you're getting a little paranoid. I think the police are interfering in this. This is communist China blocking us.
Okay.
I'm telling you for a fact.
All right.
But I want you to talk a little more about how you feel about this, because let me take a different route. You and I talked about it before the show, and we're having some bottlenecks already. So.
Well, Bill,
your normal, I mean, tell us how you feel.
I just don't. Well, phone or held out computer merely because the device was. Chip out and swallow it. They take it away from you.
All right. On the include all personal property.
John, how you doing? Can you hear me? I think you guys might have some equipment issues as opposed to spooks in the cyberspace.
Are you there?
I'm here, still here. I'm hanging in.
Yeah,
I can hear you guys.
It's
in and out, but.
You know, we've been doing this for over a year. We've never had a problem with our equipment or anything like that.
No, it's not the equipment, man.
No.
Our show's got a lot of issues, but our equipment's not one of our problems usually.
Yeah.
Okay, now getting back to what I said. If somebody gets arrested.
Yeah. Fuck. Don't say nothing about it. Just let's see what happens. So you guys can hear John out there. How about us?
Well, boy, you might have mentioned the C word, and when you mention that C word, all kinds of strange things happen.
Absolutely. But when I played this song, how did the song come out? You guys could hear it well?
I didn't hear a damn thing. You know, you're up against a lot of opposition. Do you have any idea how many thousands of Chinese restaurants there are and takeout joints? Every one of them could be in on a network.
Word of freedom into China. That's what's going on here.
That's what I think, too.
China's got the money. I'll stop bad-mouthing China for a couple of minutes, maybe.
Maybe. We'll see.
Okay, I don't have a cell phone myself.
No.
And I refuse to carry a cell phone. You know that.
Well, you used to carry
but,
a cell
Yeah, I didn't like the idea at all.
So I'm going to try something. Let's see.
John, you still there?
I am still on the line, guys. I'm not going nowhere.
John, I was just talking about the fact that I have a variety of friends, from politicians to motorcycle club people to clergy. Any one of them could get picked up and arrested, and all the phone calls I've had between them, that could put me into some type of jeopardy. That could make me a person of interest. That could put me on the Bikers Task Force. All this stuff here is my whole life could be changed because somebody else has me on their cell phone. I cannot understand. No, I guess I can stand the police points again, because they're saying that if they arrest you, if you have information in your pocket, that's evidence. If you're having a telephone, they're saying that is going to help them make arrests. That's going to help them convict more drug dealers. They're going to convict more people stealing cars, trucks, motorcycles, and all that. So Screwdriver is absolutely up in arms about this one. I'm going to speak for him because he's back in the other. Aggravate me at all. Screwdriver is vivid. I'm sorry we can't get a good point counterpoint on this right now. John, how do you feel that this is going to affect your rights? Or how do you feel about them taking this, another one of your rights, away from you?
Well, first of all, strictly just on a constitutional basis, the privacy is not addressed in the Constitution. That's an issue. That's one of those issues that's been created. The issue of privacy has been created, you know, probably certainly in the last 50 years. There's no guarantee for privacy, most of the state courts in the states, they've all weighed in on the fact that you don't have any guarantee of privacy, particularly out in the public. Most of the states agree that public servants have no right to privacy, and you know, if you're basically out there in the mix, you can't make a real solid case for your privacy, because that's an issue that nobody's really weighed in on. There's no guarantee of privacy. I don't. What that would mean for me is I'd have to do a lot of due diligence if I thought that some aspect of a conversation or something I said or if I think that I'm involved in anything that might be picked up on or overheard or overseen or snooped on, I'm just going to have to take some due diligence and apply some safeguards. That's how I'm going to deal with it. That's strictly from a technical point. I don't think that's a constitutional point.
California is locked in solid right now. The California Supreme Court is locked in. However, the U.S. Supreme Court has not come down with it. Now, I believe it's Ohio Supreme Court, 2009. They said police do not. The static is getting on my last screw. Oh, there we go. Another break in life.
Johnny, you still there?
Yep, still there.
The computer's telling me something. They're scrambling something. Get signed up for the show. They redo everything all over again.
Well, I can Phil, I can hear you loud and clear.
Kind of static.
The static's back. It's just kind of low, and it's intermittent. It's off and on.
Hey, can you hear me all right?
Yeah, Jan, I can hear you good, loud and clear.
Oh, great. I tell you what, I'll be glad to talk with you, John. Bill was sounding great. I think that Phil might have had a problem with his telephone or something.
The first thing I usually go when I'm having a problem, it's either a hardware problem or a software problem. This is problematic. Getting all this to work is kind of problematic. When it does work, it's great. But when it doesn't work, it's a pain in the ass and it's annoying like it is now. So, but I'm a hardware geek, so I understand what's involved. But, there's a whole lot of things that go wrong when you fire up all this equipment. Simple things like just connections, like physical connections to the phone, to the jack, and to the wall. And if you don't balance all this stuff out and try to get it right, there's any number of things can happen. So I'm not that paranoid that anybody's making a deliberate effort to block the conversation, the flow of conversation. I think they would rather have us up and talking so they could, monitor the flow as opposed to not hearing what we have to say. And I don't know that they're really that interested in what you and I have to say about the issue.
That's probably...
No, personally,
that's really...
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Getting some static in the background. I think it's from your telephone, Philip. Bill's telephone was sounding real clear.
Yeah.
Bill's sitting right here with me, Jen.
And is he able to speak on the phone that he talks in through, or?
Talking on the same phone. Not the phone. It's not the problem.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right. Yeah. Anyways, John, you're sounding loud and clear. You've got the Skype. I've got the Skype.
Maybe Skype is the way to go with all this, and trying to bypass the phone connections. In a system, the more components you have to a system, the more probability is that you're going to have a problem. So using Skype is more of a direct approach, and it eliminates the uncertainty of all those other connections with the telephone. So
right.
What you guys need to understand is there's a lot of money we're sitting in front of that's invested in this. Okay, it's not the phone. It's not. They're doing it to us. They're parked out in front of the house with a fucking antenna up. They're doing it to us right now.
Well, I'll have to take your word for that, Phil. But if they're doing that, then that's a whole other issue. I mean, it's
right.
It's not paranoia if they're really out to get you. And believe me, Philip does have a lot of things going on in Oceanside. He's well known in Oceanside, and it's quite possible that they're parked outside with an antenna. It's quite possible.
And I have to tell you, Philip is completely paranoid. It's the communists from China. I don't know why. I'm okay.
Those goddamn commies. Look, we've been at them now for 50 years. We hit up against them in Korea, and now we got them with, they just never go away.
It's not Hanoi Jane, is it? it's Korea still, right?
Well, it's north and south. Well, it's divided. Then they got the commies up north. They got business people, the capitalists down south, and
let's say hello to Evil E, calling all the way from England. I hope you're feeling better. And Art, and we've got Kimmy and Lynn, and lots of guests in listening to us. So, you know, I think that that's the Oceanside Police Department, though.
I want to readdress that the issue of privacy. Issue of privacy was created. It's what's known in law as a legal fiction. It's an argument that was created. You know, they throw this argument up on the wall to see if it'll stick. And Roe versus Wade was the closest that anybody's ever gotten to the issue of privacy. And that was a woman's right to to have control over her body, and to do what she is, what she deems the best for herself. And that's the issue. There was the intrusion of of either the state or the government into her personal spheres of freedom. So that's the only, as far as I can determine, that's the only area that privacy's been addressed at in any way that that you can cite, you come up with a citation or a statute or a legal opinion. I don't know. There's no reasonable expectation of privacy, and I think that overrides everything else that none of us on any level, including police officers, but no one has a right to privacy. It's essentially has never been addressed. So it's up in the air. This might be
My goodness, listen to what they're doing to them. It's torture. They're torturing them.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah. I thought they were torturing you, Philip.
No, I'm on a cell. We'll see how long this one goes. Hold on a minute. I'm going to try and put it on speakerphone and see what happens.
Ooh, that could make some eerie sounds, couldn't it, John?
Yeah. sounds like a repeat of Outer Limits.
Yeah, back to what you were saying. You know, I really dislike the way that. Okay, now check this out. The original reason for wiretapping laws in the first place was because there were mafia people who were getting off on technicalities, and so the courts said, well, you know what, if you craft these laws that say that that you've got to have two-party consent or all-party consent, then that will be okay, and they won't be able to get off on these technicalities anymore. Now,
it's a foot in the door.
So the police got really familiar with the wiretapping laws. They started to know it inside out. And then everyone started to get video cameras and cell phones with video cameras, and started to start filming and audio taping.
Can you hear us now?
All these abuses, yeah.
Yeah, I can hear you, Bill.
Yeah.
Okay, my phone, they zapped my phone. My cell phone went dead, Bill.
Yeah, it did right in front of my face.
Did they
Once again, in? I have to say, it's the communists.
Did they come in the house and do this?
No.
Because at one point, it sounded like they were torturing you. There was like
I have a nice voice. It's Philip's voice that sounds like he's being tortured normally. I have to put up with it for hours on end.
We'll see what happens. I just put in a zap on them, so we'll see how long we last now.
Oh, you got a reverse zap happening on them?
We're thought you can hear us clearly, right?
You have no idea about the most sophistication stuff the screwdrivers got here. I have no idea at all. He's got thingamajiggers and who's he what's this and all those important things. We missed almost everything you said. I was appreciating what John was saying. Every state is going to address this issue of this searchless warrant.
Right, because
every state's going to do it.
I think of it as this. You know, there's a line in here from, you know, it's like the Ohio-California split could prompt the high nation's court to take up the issue. And this is an impact.
The Supreme Court's got to deal with
right.
this.
Right. It says this has an impact on the day-to-day jobs of police officers and what kind of searches they can conduct without a warrant when they arrest someone. It takes into the realm of new technology. The U.S. Supreme Court ruled in June that the police department did not violate an officer's privacy when it read text messages he had sent on a department-owned phone.
Mm-hmm. In 2009, it was the Ohio Supreme Court said that they do not have the right. So I think this is going to be a state-by-state issue until enough states get involved, and then the United States Supreme Court is going to step in and deal with it. But each state here is going to do this on their own separate
right.
issues. With
it's just like we told you guys before. Whatever happens on the East Coast happens out here at West. Whatever happens on the West Coast
yeah.
is going East. All this started with that kid in Maryland that filmed that cop that got out of the car undercover.
Well, I think it started a long time before that, though, didn't it? I mean, you know, this has been going on.
It's been on and off. Everybody's been testing the waters, but I think, you know, like, sometimes California leads the way in stupid shit.
Yeah. Well, Maryland is really leading the way, I think, in terms of this kind of thing. I mean, hopping out of the car, gun drawn, you're in plain clothes. I mean, that guy, I forget his name, I'm sorry, but the cop was totally wrong, because at that point, if it had been somebody that had a gun and wanted to have a shootout with him, I think he would have been defending himself.
Right. See, there's another one that came out today, and it's called The War on Cameras. It was in that the January issue of Reason. The guy's name was Radley Balco. I put it up on the blog. It'll come out after midnight tonight. But it's five pages of all the stuff that happened. And according to them, the national debate over recording an on-duty police officer erupted in 2010 after two high-profile incidents in Maryland. The first was in March, shortly after the University of Maryland's basketball game, or team beat Duke, and the other one was when that guy jumped out of the car. So they arrested everybody they were charged with assault and resisting arrest.
You know, here in Oceanside, we do not have a civilian review board, and every now and then that comes up, and I really try to support that seriously, because I think you or I would be perfect on that.
Right.
I think, even though we disagree on a lot of things, I think that before we made a decision, we would look at everything objectively. And I'm still waiting for you to get a little older so I can get you in the senior citizen support car or the squad car. You and I.
No, I already tried. You only have to be 50 years old. They do not want my help.
No. I figure you and I could have tucked our hair up underneath the hats or something, cruise around, you know, turn the lights on, and say, "Hey, you, pull over." No, that's too bad.
See, like, even in the states where the law is clear, it can still be misstated and misapplied. The Pennsylvania Supreme Court ruled in 1989 that the state's wiretapping statute does not apply to an on-duty police officer or other public officials because they have no expression of privacy. The decision was bolstered again in 2005 when a federal judge in Pennsylvania ruled that police had illegally arrested, I won't say the guy's name, on a charge of harassing police officers after he videotaped traffic stops from a nearby field. While the case did not rely on wiretapping laws, he was too far away to pick up the audio. The judge said there was no justification for the actions of defendants violating Robinson's right to free speech. But then the arrests, they continued in Pennsylvania. In 2007, they got charged a kid with a felony for recording his traffic stop. In 2009, was arrested for violating the wiretap law after he used his cell phone to record an altercation between his friend and a police officer. The charges were also dropped. So the ACLU is all over this. From what I'm reading right here, it's every other paragraph the ACLU is highlighted.
I don't know enough about the ACLU. I know that they take my opinion sometimes absolutely stupid cases. I don't know if they're trying to get publicity, but on the other hand, I hear ACLU stepping up to the plate and being there 100% for people that their rights are violated. So I'm still, some days I like them, sometimes I think they're just, you know,
yeah,
trying to get some publicity.
Yeah, Jan had to leave, but she'll be back.
Okay.
Eva Lee's
well,
Don, you're still on the phone?
Yeah, I'm still here. The ACLU, I've had some contact with them. They like high-profile politically
yeah.
correct issues to deal with. You know, if
well,
they don't
right
deem
going
you,
on right here is a high profile to me.
Yeah, again, I sometimes I give them kudos, and sometimes I think, you know, are you helping this person, or are you just getting all the publicity? So, again, depending on what day of the week it is, John, how I feel about the ACLU.
Yeah, you know, it's problematic whether you can rely on whether the ACLU is going to pick up on an issue or not. It's a grab bag, you know. There are people that I'm in contact with, and the ACLU has picked up on some of their issues, and you would think that some of the other issues that have been raised would get picked up also, and for whatever inexplicable reason, they choose not to weigh in on it. So you never know what the guidelines are for the ACLU's. It's a grab bag, and you just you know, it's whatever day of the week. It might be one. Bill, it might just be exactly that. Whatever day of the week, and you know, just how that issue comes off. And they've said that in the conversation was relayed to me that a particular issue that they didn't weigh in on only because it wasn't public enough. There wasn't enough. It wasn't a high profile issue. So. You know, you could get your head beat in, in the squad car, but if it's not a high-profile beat in, they may not weigh in on it. So you need a whole crew out there and CNN, and then, then they're there, and then they hit you up for donations. And
Bill, a couple weeks ago, they sent me a letter from the Police Association. They wanted a donation.
That's chutzpah. That's what the Chinese call chutzpah.
It doesn't matter. If you don't give them a check, they'll write you another ticket next week for something. So they'll get the money out of you. You know, the ACLU is a tool. It's a tool to be used, and it does help a lot of people. But, again, and I do know they have to raise money because they have expenses and all that. So, again, I'm not against the ACLU. I just think a lot of time they've taken cases which I thought were just a celebrity chasing, ambulance chasing, I guess. I don't know. Again, but if that's the only help you got, and they do help you, then God bless them for that, because there are people who need help out here. And the ACLU does need money to keep themselves going. So over the long run, I'd have to say, you know, kudos to them. I just sometimes don't know if they really have. For example, let me give an example here. A black man in Compton gets pulled over by a cop and gets beat up. Situation A. Situation B, a white man in Beverly Hills gets pulled over and beaten by a cop. I don't know which case they're going to take, but I got my feeling that they're going to take one over the other one.
Right. I mean, you know, it's you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. Anytime you try and stand up for your rights, somebody wants to knock you down.
I've also said this many times, and I'm sure some of our friends in the air target will be saying it, but if you do nothing in this world, nobody's going to complain. If you do anything, somebody is going to complain against you. And I've done a lot of work. Well, let me talk about all the charity runs I did. I always ask for suggestions, and somebody called up, or she wrote this suggestion down. They said to me, your food was too spicy. This is not in order, but I'm going to take the next one out of my head here. Your food was too bland. A jet plane came over from San Diego Airport and made a lot of Americans stand a lot taller. Some people wrote in, I didn't like that airplane coming over. Another person said, I thought that airplane coming over made me feel better as an American.
Well, you know, you can't leave.
I can't please everybody, and I've learned that. And I'm sure the ACLU's got its, you know,
yeah,
people like me that aren't real happy, but they got people saying these great things. We'll get off to a bumpy start here, but again, we've had bumpier starts here.
Right. So we'll switch gears for a minute.
Let me just wrap it up here. You said that you pretty much, I'll get straight now, you think this whole thing of warrantless searches to take your cell phone, you absolutely cannot see anything good coming out of it. You,
no.
You think that the evil being done,
Bill,
outweighs, I'm just asking you, outweighs
Bill,
the good.
There's already a thing on this. There's a guy doing time right now. Because They said they found a joint in his motorhome.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't a joint. It was a baggie. It had nothing in it, just an odor. They confiscated his computer. Somebody had taken pictures of the kids at the beach. Charged him with child pornography.
Getting somebody's cell phone may find somebody that was involved in a large... Or we have this sex slavery going on here in California running rampant. I think that it can lead to a lot of good. And I can see your point there, because basically another one of our rights is being taken away. That's what really you feel about it.
Yeah.
I'm agree with you on that, but in that point, counterpoint, I'm saying, you know what, I think it can do a lot of good.
I know, like...
You and I don't agree on a lot of things, but we don't agree
here. Art rights and they learned to wiretap, like we learned the helmet laws. Touch and go.
Well, I don't want to...
Trial and error.
I hope nobody can hear this, but you know what? That Art's the guy somebody should check out for. You know, he's a little... I don't know what he does, and I don't want to start no trouble, but I heard stories about that guy, you know. But I wonder if he's can hear me tonight.
I don't know. Can you hear us, John?
Yep, hear loud and clear, fellas.
Okay.
You know,
John's
okay. I got
okay,
people saying they can't hear us.
John's okay with that guy, Art. I'm telling you right now, be careful that guy. Something suspicious about him.
Yeah. All that love.
One of the things I wanted to, what I originally initially called in for is, I didn't catch the Biker Lowdown last night live, and I just picked it up on the, on the podcast, and I wanted to just kind of revisit Mike Willig's case, and
sure,
you know, now that's
so just to bring everybody up to speed on Mike,
yeah.
He had a bike and he was in his restaurant. It was parked outside, and two guys from the state DMV pulled up, started checking the bike out, and confiscated the bike because they said that the numbers on it were the wrong numbers or some shit like that. And he took it all the way to the Supreme Court to get his bike back. And now the state is in contempt. They're saying the judge has no jurisdiction over the state. You want to pick it up from there?
Well, when that issue was finally resolved, it was resolved in Mike's favor, and they had to return his bikes.
Right.
But they also threw a curveball in there, and... number one, the judge wouldn't hold the DMV in contempt, which gives them a clear ticket to go ahead and do this all over again with impunity. And they wouldn't let him, his VIN number, they won't recognize that. So I guess what he has to do is he either has to accept a brand new VIN number from the DMV or go along with, and Mike suggested, you know, it's just going to be a trophy. He can't take that. He's not going to be able to have any real use of that, of his bike.
No,
so
he can't write it in there. What he could do is he could register it in Georgia through the mail, and they'll send him the paperwork and the number.
That's a good workaround. In any event, that's worth trying just to get a response out of him, just to see which direction, what they're going to. I think Mike had a pretty substantial victory. You know, the fact that he even got his bike returned. Now, I wasn't surprised that the judge wouldn't hold the DMV in contempt. I was a little more disappointed, that he finally buckled in under the pressure. But there's some issues in Mike's case that make it really important to keep on top of the progress that he's making with
right.
DMV because
he's coming back now. He's coming back next week because there's some issues with LJ's got something going on in his personal life. So Hank and I will probably be doing it again next week.
You know, one of the points I want to make out, because I am the DMV freak. All of my friends, I ask, will you buy a motorcycle? Bring the bike by my shop. Bring me the paperwork. Let me look at it. A lot of times the numbers on the frame are fine, the numbers on the motor are fine, but the pink slip itself, the title, the last four numbers could be 1, 2, 3, 4 on your frame and your motor. but on your pink slip or the title, it's 1423. They transpose a number. It's a typo. But if you're going down the road, you get pulled over for a safety check or anything, your numbers do not match your motorcycle, bam, it's impounded. I have guys coming in here, doctors coming in to bill, blah, blah, blah. I look at it and I say, your numbers aren't right.
Yep.
Oh, my God, it's not legal. I go, well, it's not actually illegal, but it's not correct. So you can, by that I mean to say you can take it down to the DMV and have them check it out, and you can get so that the title, pay slip, matches the frame and the numbers. How many people listen to me tonight have said, you know what, I've never checked my car's number. I have a nice truck outside. I don't, the numbers, I never looked at them. I bought this motorcycle from a dealership. Why should it be a problem? Because the DMV is a large organization. It can make a mistake. I don't say illegal, but if you're caught on the road with a mistake, you're going to have your bike impounded. And we have had so many friends that just take for granted that the dealership that they're buying the bike from thinks everything is good. And it is good up until the point you buy it. Then your paperwork in your name goes to the DMV, and a mistake can be made. The paperwork comes to your house, a new title, again, new title, not the people you bought the bike from. There's a mistake, and so many people out there, listen to me, if you're going to be honest with yourself, you're going to say, I haven't bothered to check my numbers because I have a brand new bike.
Right.
We sometimes get a little lazy. When I talk about getting pulled over, I say...
It's just like, Bill, if you send them your original motor, they'll send you back a new motor with that number on it.
If you send it back to the factory, that's correct.
Send it back to the factory.
For a refurbished motor, that's correct. And then you get to keep your cases. And I tell for most people, I need a new motorcycle. I'm going to buy an S&S motor, which I think S&S motors are fantastic. I favor them over Harleys. However, the value of your motorcycle is, if you have a Harley, that the numbers on the frame and the motor match your pink slip. So if you take your case and send them back to the factory and they give you a whole new motor, you keep your pink slip. If you get an S&S motor and you put it in your frame, you now have new numbers with your paperwork. You have to change everything over. And unless it's a true Honda, a true Yamaha, or a true Harley, you don't have the value.
Right.
So I'm challenging everybody tonight. Don't just check your motorcycle. Go out and look at your car. Look at your truck. Did you ever wonder what the VIN number is on your truck or your car? Most people just, no, it's no big deal.
Right.
It is a big deal, guys. It is a big deal.
Bill, it's due diligence, and that's the things you have to do if you want to keep yourself safe and you want that layer of protection. You've just got to assume that there's something, you know, there's something wrong. You've got to assume that somewhere along the line that, you know, you've got to know for sure. You've got to really be on top of all your affairs. And it sounds paranoia to say it, but you've got to check and recheck and then check yourself again just to make sure that you got it right the first two times. Because if you don't,
another thing I like to is you got to buy a motorcycle from Kennedy's Custom Cycles in Oceanside. Besides going to the bike with you, I show you where the frame number is. I show you where the motor number is, because different years they change. Why I do that is when the cop pulls you over, whatever, safety check, whatever, the different motorcycles, even the different models of Harley-Davidsons, have the numbers in different areas. If the cop can't find your frame number or your motor number, he gets embarrassed because he's supposed to be professional and everything. Then once he gets embarrassed, his whole attitude is going down. I tell people, when you feel the officer is losing control, say, officer, may I point out to you where the frame is, where the motor is? He more often than not will say, thank you very much. But if he keeps getting more frustrated, he's going to call back up, and it just explodes. It goes on and on and on. You, it's your motorcycle. You have the responsibility to know what the slip is, where your motor number is, and where your frame number is. Every one of us have that responsibility.
We're gonna bring in another caller, Bill.
All right.
John, I'd like you to stay on the line for this.
Yeah, sure.
I'm gonna play this song, and I'm gonna send somebody a message. And as soon as they call in, I'm gonna stop the song, and then we're going to change to a different topic here. And once I get this person on the phone, I'll introduce her and everybody will get...
She's got a story to tell tonight.
She's got a very interesting story to tell, and everybody's going to be surprised with this one.
Yeah. Sorry for dragging out the DMV friends, but it's important for everybody.
This is probably going to be about a minute and a half, and then I'll bring her in.
At times life is wicked and I just can't see the light. A silver lining sometimes isn't enough to make some wrong seem right. Whatever life brings, I've been through everything, and now I'm on my knees, oh, but I know I must go on. Although I heard I must be strong, because inside I know.
Hey, we got a little Creed here tonight. Hope everybody likes them there.
There we go.
one of Philip's favorites in here.
Is that you, Lynn?
Yes, it is.
How are you doing?
Good evening, Lynn. I'm glad you called in. Would you tell us a little bit?
Wait a minute. The reason I picked that song, I think you understand why. Did you get the message?
Yes, I did. Thank you. Thank you. It means a lot. Thank you.
That's great. We're in 15, 18 countries. You get secret messages going out to people. I don't know what you're talking about. The rest of the 18 countries doesn't know what you're talking about, but that's fine.
You're going to tell us
secret messages out, man.
I played that song for a reason, because when she starts telling her story.
I'm not judgmental of my friends.
Be quiet and listen. Sorry, when she starts telling her story, people will understand why I played that song. Go ahead, Lynn.
Thank you. Well, first of all, Phil and Bill, thank you so much for accommodating me at such a short notice. And I want to thank all the listeners that are listening today and for giving me a couple of minutes of their time and of their life to listen to the story. And I
you
think
got
it's,
as long as you want.
Thank you so much. Well, basically, my story is I'm a resident in Florida here in the U.S. And sometime approximately between January 2009 and April of 2009, my daughter, who was then about 3.5 years old, she began to exhibit some strange behavior. I'm a single mom, and I'm very involved in my daughter's life. And so I was beginning to pay attention to some things that I just had not seen before. This included some sexualized acts. She was such as trying to kiss, in a very passionate manner, adults and other children. She would start rubbing her genitalia at times, undressing dolls. She would place them in very sexualized positions. I caught her gagging herself many times in the bathtub with small objects like soaps and little play cups that she used to play with the water. She did also other things that were strange. She would draw some pictures and then all of a sudden start stabbing them violently and ripping the paper apart into pieces. It was always very aggressive. Sometimes after drawing, sometimes on other occasions, she would violently just attack me out of the blue with no necessary trigger that I could identify. And that included punching me in the stomach, in the face. My daughter would throw objects of any kind towards me. It didn't matter. She couldn't tell if it was something very dangerous or something that wouldn't hurt. She just picked it up and would throw it at me. She would call me the monster. Her daycare would start calling me during this time, and I had to leave work. Thankfully, I worked nearby, and they needed my assistance in changing her. She had regressed from panty training to pull-ups they needed my help because whenever they tried to assist her with her hygiene, she would tell them, please don't hurt me, and she would just start screaming and hitting them and saying, please don't hurt me. My daughter would insist on wearing several layers of clothing, and we're in Florida, in spite of the warm weather. It was just very strange, and she had to wear pants and a skirt and a shirt and another shirt and a sweater. It didn't make sense. All these changes happening, and as a parent, of course, now looking back, I feel somewhat guilty because you feel like you should have known better, but most of us don't walk around with these preconceived notions of sexual abuse or things like that. She often argued with me about taking baths. It was almost like she wanted to remain in the sense of being dirty. So what I did was, I actually wanted to mention one more sign in case other parents that are listening, you never know, this is something that children are exhibiting, but she would mutilate her fingers too, and I think it had to do with anxiety. She would eat her fingernails. I mean, the tips of her fingers at 3.5 years old were practically gone. They were bloody. They were mutilated. She made a lot of self-depreciating statements to herself. I'm a monster. I'm dirty. I'm a bad girl. She would put herself on timeout and then start crying. She would do something else very strange. She would hold on to her stool like when it was time to go potty, and she would cross her legs, and though she would tell you that she was pushing, which is the opposite of like holding in and straining herself. And at some point during this time, she suffered a very severe, I say severe because it was almost a month long, a urinary tract infection. Now, all of this stuff, of course, is especially specific to the urinary tract infection. All this stuff is documented, and some of the things I'm going to talk about, I have video and, of course, court audio recordings to confirm it. So I'm very comfortable with the things that I'm going to say tonight. So I met finally with a family therapist close to that time, which was April of 2009, following that timeline of January through March. And in April, I explained to him what was going on. This family therapist is someone that I had voluntarily been seeing for a while after my divorce. I wanted to be a good mom, and I wanted personal growth and career enhancement. So I was seeing this therapist, and after he heard and saw some of the things in the visit when I took my daughter to see him, he was like, I'm not going to touch this. I'm not going to change this. We've got to leave this to the professionals. You need to go home right now and call the child abuse hotline. Here in Florida, we have a child abuse hotline, which I imagine is all over the state. in the other states as well. And so I got home, and I think like most people, one of the things, I think this is very normal, you really don't walk around again with those preconceived notions of abuse, and you don't have any formal education on this, because this is not stuff that they give you when the baby's born and you walk to the hospital. But I knew something was wrong as a parent. But it's not easy to just pick up a phone and call some abuse hotline and tell and explain to people what's going on, because you don't yourself don't know what's going on. You don't know who you're going to accuse, or you don't even know if it's sexual abuse or what. It was just suggested that there's a problem, there's something wrong here. So as I was trying to argue with myself that same evening, what do? You know, I had plans to attend a pre-wedding celebration for a dear friend of mine. You know, I said, you know, I do have these pictures I've been collecting of pedophile profiles of people all over the United States that matched with the last name of the family, like the family last name of where my ex-husband was residing. I wasn't familiar with the people in that home, and that's primarily due to the fact that he always refused to give me that information. That kind of stuff you really cannot get unless you go to court and you spend all this money in attorneys and you have to make a big deal about it. And I was trying to be as amicable as I could after our divorce. He was living previously with his girlfriend, my ex-husband, and so due to financial reasons, he and his girlfriend moved in with his girlfriend's mother, and that's all I knew. So I said, just in case, let me look up some last names here and there. And so what I did was I pulled up a picture. It was the first picture of, like, 30 that I had, and my daughter was watching television. She turned around, and she told me, and I'm quoting this. She said, "What is Jan's father doing there?" Now, Jen is the pet name for my ex-husband's now ex-girlfriend. It used to be his girlfriend. So the first thing I'm thinking is, oh my gosh, there's a guy, like a pedophile, hiding in this home, and my daughter's just ID'd him, and probably that has to do with what's going on. I don't know. But then she said, "I don't like him. He's mean to me." When I asked my daughter, "This man in the picture, why do you say he's mean to you?" And she said, "He hurt my butt." And basically, I'm going to skip over the emotional, you know, roller coaster that a parent that discovers something like this, because that's a whole other show. That's a whole other experience.
Right.
And discussion. And I want to just give folks a feel for what's happening in this country. And from what I'm learning lately, I've connected with people in the UK and Australia. It's an epidemic. So
ma'am,
at this moment, you know, yes.
Can I talk for a second? This is Bill Kennedy.
Hi, Bill.
Ma'am, do you see how slow I speak?
Yes.
You need to take a breath in between sentences. You're running everything together, and I know you're
okay.
Excited, interested, and now you're a little nervous, but for the people trying to listen to you, you've thrown a lot of words all at once. We want to hear what you have to say, but take all the time you want. We're not going to cut you off.
Okay.
You're doing
so
an excellent job, but you're putting
thank
the longest sentence I've heard in my life together.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Well, at this moment, you know, I wasn't thinking about calling this child abuse hotline, because what happens is that your automatic basically comes out, and what you think is what any sensible person thinks, I think, is call 911.
Right.
Now, there wasn't anything else that I could do. I was frozen, but I was able to ask my daughter another question. You know, I asked him, "What's this guy's name?" Now, the guy on the pedophile profile sheet was a guy in Oklahoma. And his name, I can say, because it's on the registry, the FBI registry, and it's Robert Dale Belter. That was the name of the family. Now, my daughter, though, didn't call him Robert. She said his name was Leo, like the zodiac sign. So I asked her to demonstrate what he had done to her. And now, please note that the entire context of the conversation is based on something about her butt. Well, my daughter spank me on my butt, but that moment I exhale and I say, well, maybe this guy is someone that's spanking her, which still pisses me off, right? But it's not the worst. But then she broke my butt, like showing me again how she's broken me. So I said,
wow.
I asked her one final time, and I said, you know, demonstrate to me, show me what he did, because now I'm a little confused. And so we're talking about butt, and she comes at me now with her finger pointing at, like she's going to try to insert, like trying to show me insertion in the vagina. Now she's at my front. So, you know, originally I had thought all these other possibilities, like the spanking or whatnot, but, I mean, at that point it couldn't be more clear. So waiting for the police calls me, everything's by phone. They call me, they send local law enforcement, the city, which is the city of Fort Lauderdale. they take the report and all that, but because the alleged crime may have occurred in another city, another jurisdiction, they assign it to the Broward Sheriff's Office, which here is an organization that is every day in the paper almost for corruption. I mean, it's a very questionable organization.
Well, that's how you got a hold of us, right?
Well, that's how I got a hold of you. Exactly one of the stories you featured was about corruption in the Broward Sheriff's Office. Well, they basically told me after several hours of waiting that the detective would call me the next day. This was a Friday that this started, and then Saturday I got a phone call letting me know the person was on vacation, and I had to wait till Monday, but that I was not to allow my child to go back to that home until further notice.
Wow.
But this is where the shocking part. I mean, one thing is to have a victim child, possibly a victim child, but then they turn it against you, and this is where the larger nightmare starts. So now we're in April, go ahead.
Just hold on for a second. Let me enlighten you here with something real quick.
Okay.
Right now in the United States, you have 85,719 people listening to you.
Listen to your story.
In Canada, you have 6,398. In Germany,
yeah,
you have 210. In Australia, you have 3,122.
It's not an American problem. It's a world problem.
In Denmark, you have 2,990. In South Korea, you have 2,525. In the United Kingdom, which is Great Britain, we have 1,991. In France, you have 1,733. Brazil has 1,538. And bringing up the rear, Bill, is Russia with 294. And if I look again, your one guy from China is probably in there. But I didn't mean to interrupt you. I just wanted you to know that your message is getting out tonight.
I want to say something, too, before you start your message again. A couple months back, I was asked to speak in San Diego, and it was about domestic violence. And it ended up being, I kept referring to molestation of children by family members. I was calling it America's Dirty Little Secret.
Mm-hmm.
And after the after my speech, that day I had three women come up to me. The next day in my home in North County, two more women came up to me and said, I heard your speech, and I was abused as a child. I never told my parents. My parents had no idea. And it's like you were one of the rare people that would identify you. You were one of the rare people that can start to get your children help. Because every woman I spoke to has said that their relationship with men has gone right into the toilet. And, in fact, these abused men, they've told me they seek to destroy their relationship. They don't want the relationship to work. They're punishing themselves even though they were the ones that was the victims. I spoke to one lady, and she said, the very last lady, and she said she was married at the time. And she was raped and beaten.
Yeah.
And so I said, have you been to, did you go to the hospital? She said, yes. And I said, did you get the police? She said, yes. And they found this man, and he was convicted and put into prison. Her and her husband went to 6 months of counseling together. Her husband was extremely there for her. And what happened was, after 6 months, he went to work one day, she packed up and left. She couldn't bear the shame of letting her husband know and live with her husband when he knew what happened. So she has been from useless relationship, broken relationship. That's what she seeks now. She's still punishing herself. She's the victim. And that's what we people don't understand. The victims in today are the children. The victims are people like you going to the police department and all the agencies.
Yeah, and that's how we got that new law, that Amber-Gabad law.
Yeah. So go ahead, please. I just wanted to share what we certainly screwdriver and I cannot say we understand, but we're aware of what your dilemma is and what you're trying to, like Don Quixote. You're trying to fight the windmill by yourself, and it's a tough up road. And the state legislature, the people, they're not there to help you at times. They're just, sometimes they want you to just go away. We give it back to you, dear.
No, exactly. And actually, to add on to that, Bill, you're absolutely right. And just looking at the beginning of some of the things that I shared, you can see that I can see my daughter's possible negative future if we don't intercept in already the things like the self-depreciating comments that she made to herself. She's already she's already seeing herself in a negative way, and that could be the beginning of something more terrible as an adult if it's not assessed now by competent parents that are not ashamed to talk about this, because there's no reason to be ashamed of this, and seek the help and say, yes, she's a victim, but she's also a survivor, and she's going to be a survivor. So that's a very important point that you share there. Well,
what's amazing is that you were able to identify it. The sad thing is there's so many young girls of all ages that have this thrust upon them, and they're embarrassed to tell their own family, because sometimes it's a family member, an uncle, some relative that does this. So they do not want to tell the family. And later, high school, college, it just, they carry it on their back, and they destroy every chance, every relationship they have. They were too embarrassed. They didn't do anything wrong. But their families, they're not able to deal with it. So again, I wonder what you're saying, getting the message out to all these young people. You have to be aware of your changes in your child's personality. I thought that was right on the button.
Just to let you know, if people are calling their friends to tune in, because the numbers just went up on each one of these, went up 200 to 300 already.
Okay.
This message is not about you, but what I'm hearing tonight is the message is more important than the messenger.
Right.
So we're using your name and your story, but this message goes out to people across the world. People won't even talk about it. This is why I applaud you. I sincerely, what you're doing is an amazing thing. So please continue.
And we got somebody that typed into the chat. They'd like to chime in. He's unmuted, but he wants to hear the rest of this before he chimes in. So go ahead.
Sure. Great. Thank you. So
we have
now
people
we're,
who do want to ask you questions and all that. So as you finish up, then we'll open up the questions.
I'm honored. So that was January through April of 2009. Now we're in May. At this point, the detectives, and I'm quoting now, this is on reports, there's no Leo living at that house. They ran an address check. Now, this is all they told me. This is all they did. I asked the father directly at that point if he knew a Leo. Now, remember, I'm disobeying the Broward Sheriff's Office Special Victim Unit at this point because I was told not to speak to him. But I'm saying there's something not right here. I'm glad that I spoke to him because he told me in speakerphone, and he confirmed this in open court, that in the presence of my parents, he did say, yes, Leo is my girlfriend's mother's boyfriend who lives with us. Why, he says. I explained to him what happened, and he asked me, I asked him for Leo's last name. I said, I got to run a background search on this guy. I got to tell the police right away, even though they were not calling me to that point. So my ex-husband, you know, this is the father of my child. He refused and he demanded that I immediately put him in contact with the investigators. I complied with him. Evidence of this again. He's never said that this didn't happen. And I immediately left messages for the detectives as well. Please call the father. He needs to know. He has a right as well. So, you know, you got to understand that at the same time, I can see how he feels uncomfortable. He's financially dependent on this family. This is my ex-husband. It's very difficult, like you were talking about people that abuse relatives, you know, to think that the guy you're living with is hurting your little girl. And this is, but you could also see how my daughter was right on the money. She had the first name right. She said that it was my ex-husband's girlfriend's father because he was the older guy in the home, so she associated him with that family role. So my daughter was right on the money. I didn't hear from police in May, so all I could do was seek a restraining order. Nothing else occurred to me against the alleged abuser. I also got one against the father because I felt he was not looking after his daughter's best interest. In one of those hearings, which I have the court audio recording, my ex-husband confirmed that he had made several attempts to contact the lead detective on this case. Her name was Carol Dansky, and she was with the Broward Sheriff's Office Special Victims Unit. She's no longer there. They haven't told me why, but she's no longer there from the last time I checked. And she hung up the phone on him, according to him, and said that she would only speak to me, Lynn Moscoso. During this time, in the hearing, my ex-husband and I, both of us, stated to the judge that the detective never returned our calls in spite of several attempts to make contact. my ex-husband declared that I must have been lying the whole time because no one's calling him back, so I must be making it up. One evening, totally as a desperate act, a friend of mine who used to serve in law enforcement, he drove me to my ex-husband's residence, which everyone, including my ex-husband, has confirmed I had never been to before because I don't want problems with this guy. I wrote down all the license tags of the three vehicles that were parked outside because I said, you know, the police is not going to go. I'm going to go. So sometime that late evening, I went online. I found a detective agency that ran an online service, and I ran the tags purely on instinct. I ran the tags for one vehicle first because it just seemed like it was out of place. It's just weird. It's strange to explain. It was mother's instinct. A couple of hours later, probably like 3, 4 o'clock in the morning, my time, I got a report online, and what I got was that that tag did not belong to the vehicle that it's on, so immediately a red flag came on, that the tag was expired for about 2 years, and so it was illegally placed on a car, and it was confirmed that it belonged to the owner of the house, the alleged perpetrator's girlfriend. But then below the report, which I have and I'm going to be putting up online, was very helpful because at the bottom of a beautiful report for $38, okay, less than what we pay police officers to go out there and do work, right, said at the bottom of the report, you know, there's other people that may possibly live here. It had my ex-husband's name, his girlfriend's name, and Leo and his last name. So my daughter, once again, was right. It was confirmed. I had to do, I hate to say, some of the police work for the police. I sent them the information. I called them. Do you think they called me back? No. I immediately called the law enforcement. I didn't hear back. Now, this is towards the end, probably of May 2009. In June 2009, still no calls. Restraining orders are not being granted because when I show up to court, the judges are asking me for the police, the detective report, but they're all missing in action. At that point in June, my ex-husband puts a lawsuit against me because allegedly I'm making up all of these things. My daughter was made to go back to that home during this whole time. Well, guess what? I'm a mother, and I'm going to defend my daughter. So I stopped her from going to the house. I said, let them arrest me. I believe my daughter. On July 31st.
Well, what you should have done at that point was you should have moved and not let anybody know where you went.
You know, there's a lot of things that I should have, and this is one very important part of this conversation that we're having with the listeners, that hopefully they're going to hear this and they'll know better than I did. There's a lot of things that I did, like we're getting to, such as allowing people into my home without a warrant. Those are the type of things that we don't walk around thinking these kind of things are going to happen to us to catch you off guard. And then we make mistakes such as that. You're absolutely right. I should have left the country, which takes us to what could be another conversation, which is why, you know, we wonder about the pictures of those mothers and fathers that are on the FBI most wanted list that have taken their children to other countries. Given my experience, I now question, what made them leave the country in the first place? Because now I have an inside scoop to something I never knew before. So it's a very interesting comment that you just made. But on July 31, at around 11:30 at night, and I have some of the video footage available on this, without a warrant or a legal court document, my child was abducted by the child protection team of the Broward Sheriff's Office. They were assisted by the local City of Fort Lauderdale Police. They took my child in her pajamas. The shoes were, my father was trying to put shoes on her. They pushed him out of the way. Now, my father's elderly, and he has Parkinson's. And they barged in, they took her. They yelled at me from across the street and just told me to be in court at 8 o'clock in the morning. When I was in court at 8 o'clock in August, now we're in August of 2010, you know, no sleeping, you could imagine. I was just losing my mind at that point. It was pretty much a kidnapping. Now, especially after the fact, now that I know the rights that were violated, such as the warrantless entry. The judge asked me in open court, and this is all in audio recording, if I knew why I was there, and I confirmed that I wasn't there, that I wasn't served any paperwork, so they served me there during my hearing, so violating due process here. They served me there during the hearing to give me the paperwork, and I'm thinking here, I'm here because I probably violated some kind of family law for trying to protect my child. And what I open up is this incredible frivolous report, everything from having multiple suicidal attempts to mental illness. They even put that I had two kids. I have one daughter. It was such a very poorly written report, and it was just absolutely frivolous. And that I was imminent risk that I was to my child, that I was neglecting her, that I had made up stories to separate and alienate her from her father, all sorts of stuff.
This is Bill Kennedy. I want to jump in for a second. I apologize. We have so many people that are on the list here that would like to speak to you or ask you a question or two. Can I get you to kind of put a pause on your trial, and so we can bring some of the people in that want to ask you something personal, or maybe they want to listen to you. So can we bring a caller in and talk about this?
John's on the line.
John, did you want to comment about?
Bill, Lynn, you're no longer living in Florida, is that correct?
I'm sorry, if I'm living in Florida, is that your question?
Yes, you're no longer living in Florida?
Oh, yes, I'm living still here in Broward County. Exactly.
Okay, well, there's an organization that works out of Florida called policeabuse.com. They have a very extensive network of investigators and lawyers. What you need to do, the issues, there's a lot going on here and too much to deal with, you know, just on a back-and-forth conversation. But one of the things I suggest you do, I'm familiar with the group because I have some personal contact with them. You need to Google that group. And you need to go on their webpage, and your scenario is similar to dozens of other scenarios that they've investigated. You're a victim. It's a classic domestic abuse, and you've got some serious issues here with the police department, and it's things that I can't go into. But you've really got to contact someone that deals with this on a day-to-day basis, because you're in a pretty precarious situation, and unless you've got a heavy hitter on your side, they're going to run right all over.
One very important thing that you should know, though, and just in case, maybe I should have mentioned at the beginning, I'm sharing the story, especially now, with a level head, because I have my daughter back. See, the story, my story is that there's really no winners here, and I'm quoting Tanya Kraft, that was recently relieved of some sexual abuse allegations. That's the teacher that recently was cleared. She made national headlines. There are no winners in a situation like this. So I didn't beat the state, but I beat the state. And my daughter is back with me as of May of 2010, because I did not sign a single paper. I called them liars. And during my 10-month trial, because what this gets to is this story actually has a turn, I find myself all of a sudden in a dependency trial as if I'm the bad guy. I got my daughter back, and in June of 2010, just about a month after I got my daughter back, they finally started investigating my daughter's allegations, and those reports are pretty gross. And there hasn't been any, they haven't charged the guy, and it's an open case right now, but that has a lot to do with the fact that they're investigating it a year and a couple of months later than when they should have investigated, because they got all confused, or they did this on purpose to cover up the fact that they did not properly investigate this, and were embarrassed that a mom went out there and got some of the critical information that they needed and put this all against me. But my daughter, thankfully, is with me. What I would like to do, and what I've been trying to do as I network now with parents in similar, not exact, but similar type of situations, is letting them know things such as those basic things, such as you're not supposed to let anyone into your home without a warrant. Just because a child protection team worker shows up to your home doesn't mean that you have to let them in. They're there because someone has made some type of report on you. And these reports can also be anonymous, which is completely ridiculous. And also with the documents that I'm putting up there, I want to see them how I defended myself. And I want them to see how I request things like public records and not public records. And I want them to learn about the Freedom of Information Act and other ways that they can basically arm themselves with documents and knowledge that they're going to need when they start working with their attorneys, and how to work smartly with attorneys and things like that. Because the truth is that a lot of families that are trapped in these types of situations, especially when they're innocent, are not necessarily doctors, attorneys, and people of wealth, are people that don't have resources and are going to be counting
people.
On a public. Yep, everyday people, a single mom, I would picture. You know, this is my nightmare, John. My nightmare is I am pretty prepared. I have access to technology. I have access to people that have done investigative journalism. I have access to, at that point, I had my 401k and all that before I cleaned it out, and then I ended up having to finish off with a public defender. But what about that single mom who's working double shifts that doesn't have internet access? Is going to go in there, they're going to offer her a deal. They're going to say, even though, you know, you say you're innocent and all this, this will be much easier on you. If you just sign off your here that you need a little help, you're a little kooky, sign up for some mental health services, which will make some psychologists rich for the next year. And if you do okay, we'll give you your kid back. And those parents, they don't have a chance. See, I didn't sign any. My story is a little bit, it's one of the few in this particular kind of case dependency in this type that made it out clean. I'm the type of person that's going to go back now and try, although I may not win because they're government officials, but I will try to sue them for the violations, and definitely in some details in my case involve a doctor, a pediatrician, making a mental health diagnosis in open court against me. That is one of the most difficult mental diagnosis, health diagnosis to make on an adult. It takes months to diagnose. He said he met me for about 15 minutes, and he's a pediatrician, and he made it. So this is like now malpractice, you know, negligence. You know, this is a type of information that listeners, that the ones that are listening now, and that families need to be aware of. Because information is vital. You can't put a price on it. But not everybody has access to this information. Not everybody has access to internet. Not everybody can log in right now and listen to the wonderful things and information that you're providing the listeners of this particular show. And
also right now, I just brought in, I just unmuted Teresa. Are you there?
Teresa, you live?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Teresa, this is Lynn. She's in Florida. Lynn,
hi,
this
Lynn.
Is Teresa. She's in Michigan. And John from New Jersey is on the line. He's listening,
hi.
And he asked, and she's answering it. But I wanted to tell her, and I didn't get a chance to call you today to tell you what this was going to be about tonight, but I'm glad you tuned in, and we're in the chat. But I read your writings that you sent me the other day, and they're fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
so,
thank you.
What I'd like to do is Lynn is trying to get her story out, and
okay.
Maybe we can get her hooked up with you, and you can she can send you to, or I can send you if she lets me, the story that she sent me, and maybe we can go through it and get it to where we can get it out to the media. You know what I mean?
I would love that. One of the things that I do is PR. I tune into this movie late, so I don't have all the details, but police abuse.
Well, what I'll do is if it's okay with Lynn, I'll send you what she sent me today,
absolutely.
And I'll give you her contact information, and then
okay.
The three of us can kibitz from there.
Wait, both everybody, listen to the screwdriver. Can we get Michelle San Diego involved with this here?
That's the lady
I put on the. Domestic violence seminar that I was a part of like a couple of months ago. Michelle's not on tonight, but I'm going to see. Can you with your computer stuff?
No, I already left her a message because I told Lynn about her.
Oh, good.
We're trying to do that
Lynn, you like to meet this girl.
Across the United States.
She just very quickly was, her and her daughter were kidnapped and held for ransom. It's a whole story that I'll have Screwdriver hook up with that, and how she's facing and fighting everybody to let people know you got a mother is like a wounded bear, I guess they say. When they get to the point, mm-hmm. they're mad. And Michelle had no backup at all. She'll get into this a little bit more with that. So you don't mind if we send you Bill, too?
You can send me whatever information you think is pertinent.
Sure. I appreciate that. Because she wrote in 5 pages, and it's in the writing is it's from the heart, and it's all there. But mm-hmm. I think we can do a little more with getting the message out. And part of it right now is, like I told her, I'll tell you, we're on in right now with my stat sheet. But we're, let's see, just the audience alone right now, we've got 85,737 people in the United States.
And not every one of them knows them, but I'd be surprised a third or fifth of them know somebody in their family that has this problem. Again, I call it America's dirty secret, but in actuality,
yes.
It's the world's dirty little secret.
Right.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Can you give me a brief synopsis? I heard that she had her children taken away from her.
Right. I had my my daughter was taken away from me. But I'm going to give you then my version. This is going to be my claim. My child was removed from me by local law enforcement and contracted child protection team workers by the state who work are employees of the same law enforcement organization.
Mm-hmm.
Because they wanted to cover up the fact that they didn't investigate my daughter's allegations of a non-relative that abused her sexually. When I found the guy confirming the name my daughter had provided, he was so identical to a picture she had pointed to who was not the same person.
Yeah.
So identical that they required an FBI hand scan of the two guys to make sure they were not the same. What they did was they created, in the moment of silence when they were ignoring my phone calls, a frivolous report against me, which was purely allegations. I was never
mm-hmm.
charged with anything because I would not uphold in court what they had. They had nothing against me. But what they used for 10 months, they made fun and they made a joke of the citizens of Florida by using up their money to pay legal fees, services, and all that to make a case against me to see if I would give in, sign in to one of their case plans. You'll see your daughter in 3 months, and no worries. Just sign here that you're a little bit crazy and you need some mental health services. Just sign here that you need some parenting. Just do this. In the meantime, for 10 months, my daughter was put back in the home of the alleged sexual abuser, and I had no contact with her. If I went 100 feet from the house, I was going to be arrested. Can you imagine?
Hold on a second.
That's
to me, Bill. I don't know if you get it too, but I think this would drive someone crazy.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, I'm going to say that I think she's trying to fight like Don Quixote, fighting the windmill, thinking it's a giant dragon. The task is Herculean. The fact that one person's got to take on the city, the county, the state, and all that stuff in there, that alone is so difficult. But the fact that there is no format, there's no organization, step right in. The house is on fire. Who do you call?
Fire department.
Who's Lynn Cole? That's the problem we have. We don't have a rigid program to help people. This is something that people don't want to talk about, and I know some people don't want to call them directly, they're listening to the story here.
Yeah,
it's critical.
Yeah.
I have one question. The man who your daughter accused, who is he connected to in the police?
You know, I have not been able to find out. I know he's a member of the American Legion that does a lot of work for, the police, the benevolence and all those type of organizations. I've always wondered because something in my gut tells me there's a connection, but I haven't been able to focus on that. There has to be.
Somebody, you were attacked because not so much because of you, because of who he was and who was protecting him.
I'm sure of it. My gut, that came after the madness of fighting my trial for my daughter's life and freedom
mm-hmm.
from abuse. And the whole time, there were so many things crossing my mind. But after that nightmare, I started to wonder about those things. And
mm-hmm.
There were a lot of things that went wrong. They had one gentleman testify against against me. In a way, he's testifying against me. He was providing the background check on this alleged abuser, saying he's all clear. But he was the ex-husband. He worked in the court, and he was the ex-husband of the alleged abuser's current girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of nonsense is this? So, of course, I had to bring it up, and then the judge dismissed him from the court. And I never got my background search on this guy.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It's amazing.
Lynn, could I interrupt a minute with the question?
Yes. Yes.
Good, John.
Yes.
There's a thread I see here that is your husband a Mason? Or was he a Mason?
No, he's actually from Venezuela, so he's from Latin America, and no. There's no way, I mean, not to be insulting or anything, but he didn't really have that intellectual capacity. Let me put it that way.
Okay, well, it's pretty obvious that somewhere in the good old boy network of police departments, judges, you know.
Absolutely, I'm thinking that myself.
Now,
I'm
familiar with the relationship of the almost every police officer I've known has been a member of the Masons, okay? And the Masons and the police departments and the judges and the legal profession, that is one big stew pot of fraternity. And somewhere along the line, it looks like the fix was put in, and you know, that's why you met with such a such a wall of obstruction here. Because my best guess on this is that you got hooked up with the good old boy network of police officers, the Masonic Order, and the judges and the county officials. It's one big complicated stew pot, and I've been in the middle of it, so I know exactly what, you know, I know exactly how this works. And, you know, that seems like it's a little bit off, off on a tangent, but I want you to just keep that in the back of your mind, that there's a network, a fraternal network out there that you and I don't belong to. Okay?
Yeah, right.
Well, the police bleed blue, and no matter whether a cop is ethical or unethical, they always protect their own first.
Absolutely.
And it's very incestuous. Where I'm from in Michigan, in Grand Traverse County, there was a sheriff whose name I will not mention, but his nephew, he was on the department, and he has a long track record of drinking and driving. To cover it up, he got Mothers Against Drunk Driving to give him an award.
For what, being a good drunk?
Yeah, well, for bringing in the most drunk drivers. I will give you a brief history of what happened to me. In 2006, I went to a Pagan Pride Day in Grand Rapids.
Uh-huh.
And 3 weeks later, I was working at a factory. I pulled out of the factory driveway, and I got followed and pulled over for no cause. I was searched. My car was searched. They found a decorative dagger, which I'm Wiccan. It was the equivalent of a cap gun. At the time, I thought the police were the good guys, and I didn't know you could. I got educated really quick, but I was illegally searched. I was arrested. They didn't tell me what I was being arrested for. They didn't tell. He refused to tell me what I was pulled over for.
Right.
I didn't find out what I was arrested for until I got the paperwork from my attorney. but during the process, I was searched three times, and two of them. The last two were in private, where it was by one deputy who basically he pinched nipples and massaged my genitals, and he only snapped on another deputy. I was sexually assaulted twice.
Yes, that's assault.
And there was a lot of violence, a gun against another guy. He was being a smart mouse. He was a kid. He was being a smart mouse. They beat the crap out of him and got away with it. Eventually, because I would not back down And because I did so much negative PR, they reduced it down to a misdemeanor, and it was eventually cleared off. But I was harassed for months. I was close to having an emotional breakdown because I couldn't leave my house. I couldn't sleep. I've been diagnosed with post-traumatic stress. Mm-hmm. And all because these sheriffs wanted to teach the little witch a lesson.
Right. Right.
And
stop everybody for a second. I want to apologize to everybody. We had some great technical difficulties when we first started the show. Our list of callers, we're having a hard time connecting people up here. So those are people that have been trying to call, and we can't hook up with you. We're sorry. Something happened to the show. If you've been here since the beginning, static, it went all crazy. I know people want to speak, trying to hook them up there. To all the people that are trying to get through, we have to apologize again. We just can't get you off the thing. So, again, I know people want to call up, and they want to talk to our guests. They want to talk about other things, but we're having a hard time tonight, so we have to apologize and hope you bear with us. Please go right on again, Teresa.
Okay. No, it wasn't the nephew that assaulted me. It was two other detectives, but it was on his behalf, and it was, you know, I'd never dealt with the legal system before. I didn't know what my rights were. I didn't know that I could have refused a search. I could have gotten my proof of insurance, my driver's license, locked my purse in the car, and said, "Here it is," and I refused the search. Get a warrant. You know, you have no rights to search.
What?
It was an illegal search. But since my attorney was court-appointed and part of the old boys club, he did everything but carry the prosecutor's briefcase.
Huh.
And
that's why Nancy Reagan said it best in the 80s, just say no.
Yeah. But, you know, most people, I'm a well-educated woman. I did not know. And that's one of these things that, you know, people, you know, they don't understand is it's us against them. The police are not, this is not maybe Mayberry RFD. The police have their own agenda. And when the crime rate is up, that means they get raises and they keep their jobs. When the crime rate goes down, they get laid off.
Well, right here we don't have we have crime like everybody else, but our city, I have four officers that are named in a lawsuit. There's 10 of them total, but ready to lay off some of the guys. So when I went down for the interview with the chief and the guy from internal affairs and the mayor, they wanted to know what I would do to make the lawsuit go away. Well, we told them that those would be the first four guys to go.
Yeah. And, you know, you have to get, there are so many good guys out there who are looking for jobs, who would do the job ethically and honestly, and, you know, but yet they can't get jobs because these bad apples are taking them.
Well, on my blog, there's a thing that's called cops are becoming gypsies. Troubled cops often become gypsies.
Mm-hmm.
It's posted on today's thing, but if you want to check it out later, the heading on it is just type in, when you get in there in the search, and just type in trouble cops often become gypsies, and you'll read this story. It's out of West Virginia, but it came down.
It's everywhere.
Yeah, it's everywhere, but it came down to that out of these 160 officers, 80 of them have been hired by four different towns. They're just traveling from town to town to town. Once all the heat gets on them, then they quit and move to another town.
Yeah. Well, put it this way, if your listeners look up Justin Revnell, you will see his wonderful story. The year before he arrested me, he got drunk, went home, beat up his girlfriend. She filed charges. And Uncle Sheriff had a talk with her, and before he could go to trial, she disappeared. It has been since 2000. It's been years, and none of her family and friends have heard from her. She's gone.
Wow.
the prosecutor said he's in charge of the domestic assault, said he had never seen anybody who had disappeared so completely. But people are around here are afraid to look into it.
Yeah.
So,
how big is your town?
Traverse City is medium-sized. I'm not quite too sure. Most of the people in this town are fabulous. They're wonderful. They're open-minded. They're honest. They're caring. They're sharing. It's just that, you know, there are some, like the police, especially,
mm-hmm.
That, you know, make it bad to live here. If you don't have the money to get a high-powered attorney, you're screwed.
Well, unless you learn how to do it yourself, pro per.
Right.
Which is basically what I do under the tutelage of a lawyer.
Yeah. So, it has, I'm getting back to being me. I've been in therapy for a long time. I've got post-traumatic stress. My gut still knots when I see a cop.
Mm-hmm.
But it is, you know, I'm putting it into my writing. And that's the basic way that I'm getting back to being me. And I would, you know, I would love to help you, Lynn. No one stepped up to help me.
I sent you an email already.
Okay. No one stepped up to help me, but I want to be able to help you, and I have helped others as well.
Well, that's what they say. They say the most suffering are normally the ones that are first to want to help. Because it takes one to understand the other. And if anything, you know, this is the goal, you know, out of those hopefully still remaining 85,000 listeners, you know, let them know as of tonight, if they didn't know, regardless of their educational background, that no one comes to your home without a warrant. So then you can start that off your list. That's one piece of information that just didn't cross my mind, and it seems it didn't cross Teresa's mind at that moment.
Right.
But now you know. And don't let them come into your home.
Yeah, if you step outside, they can arrest you. You talk to them through a closed, locked door.
Correct.
Never
to get on
the
phone.
The oldest trick in the book. Come on outside where we can talk to you.
Yeah.
Right.
You talk to them through a closed door, and you know, you stay in full view so they can't think that you're going to get a weapon. But you know, unless they've got a warrant, you don't let them in.
Correct.
And you document everything.
Everything. Thank you. You document everything. Every phone conversation, you follow up with a letter, a certified
mm-hmm.
letter. So many pieces of information, again, that is not readily available to people because they don't necessarily have the experience. Those are the type of things that we need to get out to our fellow Americans and beyond our borders.
The same thing goes with, you can go to, I hate to give them a plug, but you can go to Walmart, and they have a Sony, I think, but it's like $20. It records up to 8 hours. It's a digital.
Yeah.
And it's got a UBS port in it. And you can just plug it into your computer and download it.
Yeah.
And if you guys do that and invest in that, I carry one now. Bill thinks I'm crazy for carrying it, but I carry one now. I record everything. I mean, the other thing is, if they talk to me, I get their name and their badge number, or I make them give me a business card, and I fill out an IA complaint.
Yeah,
right.
One of the things, you don't have to go down to a station to file the complaint.
You can do it online. Every police department in the United States is online. All you got to do is go in there and go under the IA section, and you can download the form, fill it out, and send it in. When you do that,
I sent certified letters. I sent it
you
to
can
the
do
governor.
That also.
I sent it to the attorney general. I sent it to the police, and I sent it to the prosecutor.
And you copy and you email everybody, the Department of Justice, all of those people. It doesn't matter that they don't respond back. You email it to the governor. You get an automatic reply. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It's part of record. Now it's a public record, and you start creating that chain of information.
Yeah, I contacted the FBI, I contacted the U.S. Attorney General, I contacted the legislators, but you send it, it costs you more, but you send it certified, so they have to sign it.
Right.
Or if you're afraid to go in there, you have somebody go in and you have them hand over the copy for you, and you give, mm-hmm. you have two copies. One they date and stamp and give back to you, and the one that you turn in.
Yeah.
The other thing you can do is you do a public service request. They have 10 days to answer you, depending on your state.
Right.
After
right.
the 10 days, if nothing happens, you can get a hold of me, and I'll tell you how to get a hold of the FBI. They have
yeah.
10 days to respond. If they don't answer you in 10 days, Bill, I'm looking at the thing right now, and I just pulled it up. How to file a complaint with the police misconduct with the U.S. Department of Justice, the criminal
yeah, right.
enforcement.
Right. Yeah.
I want to remind everybody, we are Americans living in America. We should not
right.
be afraid of our police department. When we
right.
have knowledge, they should be afraid of us.
Yeah. Well, the thing of it is, they work for us. They are public servants. They work
right.
for us. We do
well,
not
the department, them. The Department of Justice has a civil enforcement program, and if you'd like to file a complaint with them, it also goes under Police Misconduct Statute Title 6 or the OJP program statute. You may need to send a written complaint too, and I have
mm-hmm.
all that information is on my blog.
Yeah, with me it's been so long. It's been that I don't know if they could do anything more for me. But I'm going to make the best lemonade out of this that I can. Like I say, it's coming out in my writing. It is, I do my best to help others. And, I can't go back and, change what happened to me, but I can try to make sure it doesn't happen to anybody else.
Can I just say some last words real quick?
Yes, please.
Go for it.
Thank you. I just want to let everyone know that this can happen to you. It doesn't matter
yeah.
your economical, cultural background. This can happen to you. It could be a dirty house. It could be an open beer bottle that someone saw when they were called into your house. It can happen to you if you're a lawyer, doctor, politician. It doesn't matter. So don't let anyone into your home without a warrant. Make sure you're listening to your children. Over-protect them. If you're getting
yeah.
a divorce, really consider it of your children so that you don't create any animosity that's going to distract you from possible problems they might be going through. Document everything and know your rights.
Yes.
Thank you.
And
the ACLU
what I'd like
has
to do
videos
is
that you can watch.
If
okay,
you guys heard that, we're down to 90 seconds.
They're shutting us off.
They're
yeah.
shutting us off. But what I'd
okay.
like to do is invite both you guys back next week, and then I'll give each one of you a call during probably in the next couple of days, and
okay.
I'll get together.
And I have to say, as an
yeah.
equal concern, again, all of our callers, they are screened. Your name is up there, the number's up there, then you're gone again. Because of technicalities we had, I have no stinking idea.
Yeah.
I can't get the numbers. So anybody want to call in, we're sorry. We lost everything tonight.
Right. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to take us out with another song, and you can hang around and on the phone and listen to this.
Okay.
To all my old friends, thank you. To my new friends tonight. Thank you for calling in.
There we go.
It don't sound like our type of music. No disrespect.
I hate that when it does that.
This is good.
Gremlin.
There's no music.
No.
Well,
10 seconds. I got
no
music.
I don't know what it's doing. There we go.
All right. Do a little more volume.
Thank you.
You guys still there?
Yes.
Your choice of music is a little depressing. You know that? There's a little energy, happiness. Why are you so sad tonight?
Did you get adjusted to that?
The only adjust we got was you're depressing, and you made us depressed now.
No. Are you? She's still there. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay. And then you can come back next week?
Yes, I'd love to.
Okay. And then it'll probably be a little shorter segment next week, but right now I know everything's going to go crazy here in the next couple of days with this. And
okay.
I'll send I sent her that, but she had trouble opening it, so I'll send it to her in a PDF file.
Okay.
And then, no, she's a very good writer. And
and Michelle, too, will get that information.
Michelle will get that information,
Michelle's
too.
Michelle's fantastic energy. Great person, yeah.
And then once once we get that, I'll see if I can get some other some of the media contacts we have out here on it.
This is story needs people. This has to be, like I said, America's dirty little secret. It's going to stop.
It's going to stop, yes. Yes.
You
thank
lost
so
your
much,
virginity.
Gentlemen. You like that?
You lost your virginity radio experience.
You know, I have to tell you, once you took a breath, you were just absolutely perfect. You
have
a good voice, a
thank
good everything.
You.
But girl, you put, I never heard so many words in one sentence in the beginning. You're just
you.
Fine, though.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the experience itself. I really do appreciate it.
Okay.
And I'm glad that I reached out to you guys.
Screwdriver and I are pretty easy to talk to. There's no problem there at all.
Thank you.
So we'll talk to you in the next couple of days, okay?
All righty. You take care of yourselves.
All right. You too.
Good night.
Bye-bye. Good night.